Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Nutcase faith-healing parents are sentenced. Senators want to question Google executives about possible antitrust violations, and the Philly fanatic takes a line drive to the head.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, June 24th, 2011. An Oregon City couple found guilty June 7th of criminal mistreatment for using faith instead of medicine to treat a serious eye condition that their child was suffering from was sentenced Friday to 90 days in jail and 3 years of probation. Timothy and Rebecca Weiland will have staggered jail sentences. The terms of their probation include providing medical care for their daughter, Elena, and keeping a log of those treatments.
Maybe next time they should use faith instead of a lawyer. We'll see how that works out.
90 days in jail.
Yeah.
For endangering your child's life because you're a nut who won't go to a doctor.
Yeah.
90 days. The defense tried to point out Friday morning that the Weilands have pledged to maintain medical care for their child and that the state was seeking unwarranted punishment. A jury deliberated for an hour and 15 minutes earlier this month before reaching their verdicts. Their decision was unanimous that Timothy and Rebecca Weiland were guilty of criminal mistreatment in the first degree. Elena Weiland suffered from a buildup of blood vessels around her left eye during the first few months of her life. And, of course, they did not take her to a doctor because, you know, God would take care of it.
Because God hates children, Dawn. Hates them.
The Weilands did not take the stand during the trial, which I don't...
Somebody is misreading the suffer the little children line. You are listening to Legion of News. It is... Is there anything you'd like to tell people about your face? Maybe the Weilands could faith heal your nose, Don.
I don't know if it's allergies or what it is. I had a massage and acupuncture treatment earlier and spent like an hour face down with my face in the face cradle-y thing. And the left...
I had a nickel.
The left side of my sinus started to kind of drip while I was doing that. And then I came in here and I kind of had a slightly, you know, gooey nose on one side. And then just before the show started, I mean seconds before the show started, I started sneezing.
You're like the River Ganges of mucus.
Yes.
Over there.
So now I'm just kind of, I have my my tissue at the ready and I'm a little...
Do I need to fetch you anything?
to make you a
drop
little hot
cloth
tea
of some kind, or okay.
Bring me a blankie.
I was gonna get ask if you need one of those neti pot things, but it's sort of like you've already got one. It just can't be turned off, and it's inside your head.
That's right. And I have one of those at home.
Yeah, I don't think that's the problem right now.
No.
I don't think anything's impacted.
No, nothing. Nothing is actually clogged.
There's no stasis at all.
It's just like someone turned on a tap, somewhere in the center of my head, and I'm just oozing life force and fun.
Okay. Anywho, you're listening to Legion of News. It is Friday, June 24th, 2011. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can at iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also join us next hour at rickemersonshow.com for the Rick Emerson radio program featuring Mr. Big Jim Willig, who will be in the studio today with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Also, Monkey Watch coming up today.
And a Penis Watch.
And quite possibly a Geek Watch. That is all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Still to come this hour in Legion of News, we have your science news, also entertainment on the march. Here is Don Taylor.
So listeners to the show and to the Rick Emerson Show may be aware that I am coulrophobic. I have this thing about clowns, as in I am terrified of them and I hate them. And just a tiny step below clowns are guys in like mascot suits. They freak me out, and I have this unreasoning hatred of them. So it's with great joy that I report that the Philly Fanatic was at a game in Allentown, Pennsylvania last Wednesday night, during which he took a line drive to the head, which caused him to have to leave the game. Tom Burgoyne, the man who usually portrays the Phillies' popular mascot, went to the hospital for treatment after being hit by a foul ball while entertaining fans of the Philadelphia Phillies. The Fanatic acted wounded, but he continued his performance for a while before leaving the stadium and going to the hospital. Ever a trooper, Burgoyne was treated in the emergency room and later released. Back at the ballpark, the Iron Pigs stumbled against the Indianapolis Indians. I guess that's what you call the Phillies? Or maybe that's a different... Oh, okay. Oh, it was a AAA game.
Just letting you sort this out on your side of the table.
It was a AAA game, but the Philly Fanatic was there to root on the Philadelphia Iron Pigs, who are a AAA team, apparently.
I thought that was... Okay.
The Iron Pigs built a 4-0 lead in the first inning behind a three-run home run from John Maryberry Jr. and a solo home run by Tag Bozied.
The Iron Pigs just sound like it... Iron Pigs just sound like some particular niche group that you would meet at one of Philly's finer gay male clubs.
Yeah, doesn't it?
You know what I mean? You know, Iron Pig seeks hefty bear or whatever.
Yeah, it
whatever.
Sounds like some kind of an S&M
Iron
sort
Pig
of a
seeks
genre.
You know, rough trade from Leather Daddy.
Yeah.
All right. And so the Iron Pig is a team?
Apparently so, the Iron Pigs.
And the Philly Fanatic, who was the mascot from the Phillies, was there just slumming it?
Just to bring pleasure to people who are not freaked out by mascots like myself.
It's just showing them what they might someday be rooted on by if they are, you know, if they continue to trend upward in terms of their baseball career.
That's true. It was to encourage the players, really, to show them what would be possible.
It was
should they just get a little bit better.
It's like how they send like Dick Vitale or somebody just to visit, you know, like a high school, basketball training camp or something, just to say like, and I could be rooting for you someday or whatever.
Yes,
okay.
It was exactly like
that. But then the mascot hit by a line drive.
Right.
Is there video?
Because it's AAA and they're not very good.
Is there, I would say that they might even be better, actually. It's the mascot who probably is the...
Yeah. Well, he can't see anything. It's not like he can duck. He can't see anything.
That's true.
He doesn't know when something's coming.
Okay. What does the Philly Fanatic look like?
He looks like nothing. That's why they call him the Fanatic, with PH, by the way, Fanatic.
Okay.
He's just a big, he looks like a big Muppet. He's just a big furry thing with a honky horn kind of face, nose, and googly eyes, and I think he has antennas or something. And he goes, woo, I'm wacky, I'm a mascot.
I'm bleeding from the face.
Yeah, and it's just, God, they're creepy.
All right.
Yeah, I don't like them. An Arizona jury convicted a self-help guru Wednesday for the deaths of three clients during a 2009 sweat lodge ceremony that went awry. It took the 12 person jury fewer than 12 hours to deem that I can't remember what his first name is, Anthony Ray, was guilty on three counts of negligent homicide. Ray, however, was acquitted of the more serious charges of manslaughter. Prosecutors asked that Ray be taken into custody immediately, a request that the judge denied. During the trial, witnesses described a two-hour event in a sweat lodge that ended with over 20 people being hospitalized. Reports in local newspapers said that the prosecutors played a recording of Ray describing the Sweat Lodge session as a hellacious event and urging his clients to ignore signs of bodily distress.
You mean hellacious, like righteous?
I guess so, yeah. Ooh, I don't know.
It could be hellacious.
At the time of the event, Ray was a massive star among self-help gurus, appearing on The Oprah Winfrey Show and Larry King Live. His company was reportedly pulling in $10 million a year and growing quickly.
Swindling white people is a growth industry.
Yes. He faced up to 11 years in prison, but could simply be placed on probation.
Here's all you need to do to swindle white people. You just find something that other cultures used to use and then abandoned once we discovered, you know, chemicals and actual medicine. And then just sell it back to white people who are convinced that because it's old and predates anything that works, it's better.
Also, just because you're hallucinating does not mean you're having a spiritual experience.
Yeah, really. Just because you're seeing dead relatives doesn't mean that yeah. Something good is happening to you.
A little peyote and no sleep and dehydration doesn't mean that's your spirit animal.
No.
Senators want to question top Google executives about its business practices, but so far they haven't agreed to come to Capitol Hill. John Simpson of Consumer Watchdog thinks that the search engine may be guilty of violating antitrust laws.
They have had their search results adjusted so as to favor their own properties or as to put competitors lower in the down in the search results.
John Simpson's a real buzzkill.
Simpson says consumers need to know if Google is misusing its dominance of the search engine market.
I can answer that right now, yes. Because, of course, what's the point of having power if you can't misuse it?
Well, as soon as it came to light that you can buy higher rankings in search engines, right there you go, okay, it's not on the up and up. It's not what you think it is.
I mean, who cares? I mean, that's like saying that, well, we have suspicions that if you look through the phone book, they might actually be charging for those huge, huge half-page ad listings that they give for people, you know, when everybody else is just in small print. Did you know that, Dawn? You can actually pay the phone book to give you more prominent placement for your phone number or business.
What?
That's what I'm saying. It's astounding.
No.
Also, sometimes if you look through newspapers, in print that approximates the size of the print that they use for actual news, there are paid commercial advertisements.
I demand an investigation.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's just, it's
mind
blowing.
This will not stand.
Exactly.
The line ends here, I think is the phrase.
Here and no further?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. I rarely say things like that, so I don't know what the...
Damn it, Q! I'm sorry, I was just
So I think the guy says something else.
Let's see. Hold on a second.
If they are using a monopoly position in an anti-competitive way, that almost certainly results in higher prices for the consumer.
But what are they supposed to do? To act fairly and uprightly? What's the point of having a large business if you can't use it to crush your enemies?
And plus, Google doesn't have a monopoly on search engines. They don't have a monopoly.
Yeah, just because they have a larger market share doesn't mean they have a monopoly. And also, they're by definition not a monopoly because Google doesn't use their dominance in one area to give them an unfair advantage in a second area, which is what a monopoly is. It's when you have such a large share or an overwhelming majority of the customer share in one field of industry and you use it to then stop innovation or competition in a wholly unrelated field of industry. That's what a monopoly is.
Is it?
Legally, yes.
Oh.
That's a monopoly doesn't mean you're the only game in town. A monopoly means that you have a huge market share. For example, this is why they always tried to pin it on Microsoft, because they said Microsoft has a vast share of the operating systems market. Software applications are a different section of industry, and so they would say that Microsoft uses their dominance in one to artificially control competition in the second. And Google doesn't do anything like that. I mean, just because people opt to use it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about search engines as opposed to Windows, is that you weren't able to just sort of use every operating system without having to fork over for it. But every search engine is de facto free. And so, it's not like there's anything stopping consumers from just switching one day. They just haven't.
No, you can go use Bing if you feel like it.
Yeah.
An Oregon dairy is accused of dumping animal waste into the water and is paying $12,000 in fines. The RSC dairy in Tillamook has agreed to pay that amount to settle its violations. The EPA says the violations were discovered during an inspection in January of 2010. Investigators say animal waste was discharged from the dairy into Hall Slough, a tributary to the Wilson River, which flows into Tillamook Bay. RSC Dairy keeps around 500 cows at its Tillamook facility. The EPA said samples of the waste showed a high concentration of E. coli bacteria. Unsurprisingly, it's cow poop. The agency adds the dairy has taken steps to correct the situation.
You know, back when you were talking about Google, I was running through all the search engines in my head, and I was trying to find one that I had not zanily referenced in the last couple of weeks. And I realized that just within the last 2 weeks on the show, I've made a Hotbot joke, a Dogpile joke, an Alta Vista joke, and a Lycos joke. And I had...
You're old.
I know I had no other search engines. Maybe that's proof that Google is a monopoly.
Alta Vista, my lord.
I've now run out of other search engines to make funny references to. I can't come up with anybody. There's got to be somebody.
By the way, I've been watching the first two seasons of Veronica Mars over again. Mm-hmm. And in season two of Veronica Mars, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on with people emailing each other and stuff. And there's this awesome product placement that AOL bought. Because whenever there's any mention of an email address, everyone on the show has an AOL.com email address.
Every now and again, I'll get an email from somebody that is, you know, blah, 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 AOL.com. And you kind of think, oh,
really?
You poor sod.
Still, really?
I mean,
still?
I am no longer at the point in my life when I automatically think less of someone because they have an AOL.com suffix. I just now am sort of, it's sort of quaint. I'm just sort of, you know, it's like when somebody says, how can you get a hold of me? Well, I'm at Rhubarb 532, you know, or whatever. I'm at Plainsview 719. I mean, it's kind of like they're, you know, it's like they're just using something, it's like they're using something from a deliberately bygone era.
Well, you take a left at the old Jensen place.
Exactly.
And go down past where the barn used to be before it burned down and they built the new barn. Yeah, it's like that.
No.
Speaking of poop, by the way, the story that we read yesterday about the Japanese researcher coming up with the poop steak might not be true.
Okay.
Writer on Salon, I think it was, either Salon or Slate, one of those ones that starts with an S, did a story. They said, you know, this was Fox.com that disseminated the story first, and everybody picked up on it. And he said, you know, they have a habit of sharing stories that aren't necessarily actually accurate.
Please tell me you read an Onion story and thought it was real.
No, that wasn't it.
Okay.
No. But anyway, apparently not only is it nigh into impossible to actually contact this researcher to verify this story, but there was a similar story that can actually be found on the internet from all the way back in 93.
Okay.
So the whole thing may just be a hoax, and that Fox News reported it as a news story, and then everybody else, including Discovery, which is where I got it from, they shared it as well as an actual news
story. So we were just unknowingly passing along untruths as fact.
Right.
Excellent.
So I wanted to clear that up, that there may not... So don't get your hopes up for poop steak anytime in the near future.
So the difference between you and me is I feel no urge to ever... I don't think I've ever retracted anything or pointed out anything that we did that was wrong or inaccurate, you know, or misleading in any way. I just don't... I figure that's sort of a caveat emptor sort of a thing. But, you know, the audience chooses to listen to anything I say and believe it to be true. That's their problem.
Well, you know, I don't want a bunch of people walking around going, woohoo, poop steak.
Or placing orders for it and waiting for it to arrive.
Or telling their friends, I know this is a fact because I heard it on Legion of News.
Seriously, but again,
which would be sad, really.
If that's the sort of thing that you find yourself saying, you really need to get yourself to a different,
Producers of the independent film channel sitcom Portlandia are holding a casting call for extras as the show prepares to start shooting its second season. The casting company Simon Max Hill is handling the applications, and they ask those who are interested to submit their information and picture electronically via the company's website. So you would want to use the search engine of your choice, not necessarily Google, to look up Simon Max Hill. Casting agents are looking for all types of people who can be available at all hours of the day and at a moment's notice. That's about half of Portland. According to the statement on the site, extras will be paid $70 a day and should be prepared to devote the entire day on set. Of the minimal restrictions listed on the site, extras would have to fill out IRS forms I-9 and W-4 before getting paid. So, you know, keep that in mind, libertarians. The show features Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein, is shot in Portland, and has been known to feature locals, including Mayor Stan Adams.
Okay.
Thursday, swimmers and sunbathers enjoyed the beach at the Alabama and Florida state line. Tuesday afternoon, Tyler McConnell, a tourist from Louisiana, was the victim of a shark attack after he fell from a rented jet ski. He suffered a serious wound to his right leg and foot. On Tuesday... On that same day, Orange Beach city officials said it was most likely a barracuda bite. Since then, doctors and marine life experts who looked at the wound said there's no doubt that McConnell was bitten by a shark. Yesterday, Melvin Shepard, the city's aquatics coordinator, denied that the city was trying to cover up a shark attack. Everything we told people Tuesday night was wrong, and it bodes the question, were you guys trying to cover something up and try to make people think that there wasn't a shark attack? Said Fox 10 reporter Al Shurik, And Shepard responded, I can honestly tell you we were not trying to cover anything up.
I don't know how you'd cover up a shark attack anyway, first of all, because if a guy is attacked by a shark, he's going to tell everybody he knows for the rest of his life.
Right, and telling people that, oh, it wasn't a shark, it's a barracuda, doesn't make people feel any more safe.
The only way it makes people feel safer is in that I don't really know what a barracuda is. And so, as a result, I'm not really sure if it's a thing I should be afraid of.
I think it's just a big, vicious fish that's almost the same size as a shark.
I thought it was a thing that looked like a... I thought it was a... what's the thing that's, you know, it's like a it looks like a dinner plate with a tail.
No.
What's that?
That's a ray.
So that's not a barracuda.
No.
Two different things.
Not even close. No.
I realize now we are unknowingly doing that thing that's what's his name? Is it Robert Vaughn? From you say barracuda. Everybody says, huh? What? we're now doing the whole Jaws thing. The idea that you're going to cover up a shark attack is sort of... That seems sort of pointless because that presumes that people aren't aware that there are sharks in the ocean and that they... I think the word is out on sharks. They're there and sometimes they bite people. I don't really know that that's... You know, I think that that is... Yeah. I think that, that information has been successfully disseminated through all of humanity by now. I don't really know that there's any covering up of that fact that would be successful at this point by anyone ever.
No.
Okay. Apparently, Bruce Agler is passing this along. He says... Where did I put this? He says, I still have a valid CompuServe address. I never use it to send... This is the weird thing. He says, I never use it to send mail, but I still get stuff sent there from time to time. So the question is, who is sending you mail at your CompuServe address? Is this like the Twilight Zone where it's like a dead email correspondent is still emailing you at your Prodigy account? So, there you go. Dear Bruce Agler at The Source.
An unusual congressional alliance has emerged to champion an effort to allow states to legalize marijuana within their own borders. Republican presidential hopeful Ron Paul has teamed up with Barney Frank, the outspoken liberal Democrat, to co-sponsor the bill, which would give states the right to legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana much the same way they currently do with alcohol. Under the proposal, the federal government would still enforce interstate smuggling, but would allow people to legally grow, use, or sell marijuana in states where it is legal. The group Normal is hailing the proposal as the first ever bill introduced to Congress to end federal marijuana prohibition. The bill's other House co-sponsors are all Democrats, Representative Don Conyers, Steve Cohen, Jared Polis, and Barbara Lee. But Paul's presence atop the legislation clears the way for advocates to slap the bipartisan tag on the proposal, as opposed to, you know, the random nutcase.
Yeah.
Label. The legislative rollout comes on the heels of a report by the Global Commission on Drug Policy that deemed the global war on drugs...
an abject failure?
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Just checking.
And suggested nations should begin experimenting with progressive drug policies, including legalization.
I like the verb experiment.
Yeah, like, you know, you want to try something else, maybe. And then if you like it, you can come back and I'll sell you some more.
I was waiting to see if you would actually finish that out. Okay.
Earlier this month, Connecticut became the latest state to decriminalize the possession of small amounts of marijuana, bringing the state's drug laws in line with a dozen or so across the nation where simple possession is no longer a state crime. Despite the apparent momentum, the Frank Paul bill still faces a long uphill battle to become law, but advocates say that having the high-profile names attached to the effort would help get the word out. Morgan Fox, communications manager at the Marijuana Policy Project, said, a bill like this is going to get talked about quite a bit. I think it will spark a strong debate in the media, and we hope to get some House floor time for it.
I like the idea that it's like a libertarian, a gay guy, and a pot smoker, all sort of together, sort of banded together to do this. Somebody wants to know what your comment about when you said, keep that in mind, libertarians, and then, by the way, wagged your finger at me for some reason, what that was in reference to. You were talking about having to file, you know, it was like $70 to be an extra. And
oh,
you file,
you know, that whole thing of you know, paying taxes is against the Constitution.
Oh no, you're confusing libertarians with like the Montana Freeman.
Oh, all right.
And Dale Gribble.
Oh, okay.
No. The libertarians, I think, pay taxes. They don't want them going to poor people.
Oh, all right.
That's the difference.
They just don't want to help anybody.
That's
with
right.
It. Okay. President Obama has launched the Advanced Manufacturing Partnership. He says it's a national effort that will create high-quality manufacturing jobs and raise America's global competitiveness.
It's about making sure our workers and businesses have the skills and the tools they...
It's about having a strangely flanged soundbite for some reason, apparently, too.
It's about making sure our workers and businesses have the skills and the tools they need.
It's about
to
speaking from inside
better,
a can of U-Ban.
Faster and smarter than anybody else.
Seen a bomb shelter somewhere?
Seriously, what is...
Inside a submarine?
Hell, okay.
He says American workers need to push harder against the global competition.
What are American workers supposed to do to be... You just go to work and you put something in a box and a guy pays you.
I don't know. You walk down to the Nissan dealership and punch a guy. I have no idea.
What is it that the workers themselves are not doing to fight global competition that they're supposed to do? Is this to make sure...
Stay here at work.
We have not run out of stuff to make.
Oh.
We've just got to reinvigorate our manufacturing sector so that it leads the world the way it always has.
So really, like bolt part of a car to another part of a car really, really well. Don't do a half-assed job.
No, the American workers' role in this is to go start making stuff.
Okay.
Because we got more stuff to make.
I guess we haven't run out of stuff to make, Don.
We have not run out of stuff to make.
This is like yesterday, the suggestion, Ludacrisps.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
And we got our prostitutes.
If somebody knows...
Start manufacturing our prostitutes.
If somebody has some sort of a contact information for Ludacris, just let me know, because I'm going to send him a Dear Luda letter and let him know about that. Ludacrisps.
We still got stuff to make.
Yeah.
That's my new tagline for everything. You know, we got... Anyway. Colorado Springs police are warning residents about a large aggressive bear that chased an officer on Thursday morning. Police issued an automated telephone call at 10:30 a.m. alerting residents living within a half-mile radius of the last sighting of the black bear. An officer approached the bear and took some photographs of it before the bear chased the officer away.
Bear don't like to be photographed.
He thought the guy was stealing his soul.
Stealing his soul, yeah.
Police spokesman Sergeant Darren Abink said, he said some photos were blurry because the officer snapped them as he was running away from the bear. The police department wants citizens to be aware of a recent sighting of a large black bear, which displayed aggressive behavior when approached by a police officer.
I like the idea that the guy still was, you know, he was taking his, you know, job seriously all the way to the end, that right as he was fleeing in terror, he was still, you know, I regret everything, and looking back and still photographing.
And the bear may not really be aggressive. He may just not like cops. Or may not like having his picture taken.
Maybe the guy was getting his picture from the wrong side.
I don't like having my picture taken, and it makes me kind of grumpy.
You know, it was sort of a don't photograph me in profile kind of a thing. It makes me look huge.
Let's not make any rash...
You should begin doing that. If somebody takes your picture, you should just charge them and bellow.
Just rear up.
Exactly.
Show my claws. The Colorado Division of Wildlife advised police that the best course of action is to leave the animal alone, and the bear will eventually leave the area on its own.
I think regardless of what animal we are talking about or what the context is, that is always the best advice. Leave nature alone.
I just want to know what the protocol was, police department-wise, that involved... I saw a bear. I have to go up to it and take pictures.
And also, don't they have, you know... You don't have to do that, like, 3 feet away. I mean, you can do that from across the... Look...
Well, you're a cop. You call it in and you say there's a bear. First of all, people will believe you. You're a cop. Second of all, you don't really need to take a picture of it because just saying there's a bear... kind of gives people a really good idea what to look for.
Kind of know what a bear looks like at this point.
Yeah.
Also, you know, it's like that whole thing where Vince Neil won't let anybody get near the stage because he looks like a big bloated sausage casing. And so, as a result, they've got what they call the FU Rockstar lens, which our friend Jason has talked about, where they just, you know, take the photo from way, way back at the soundboard, but it looks like you're right in front of the stage. Seems like, you know, you know, you don't have to get near a bear or Vince Neil at all anymore.
And who knows? Maybe that wasn't actually a bear. Maybe it was Vince Neil.
It's entirely possible.
How would you know the difference at this point?
The bear is less hairy.
Let's do science.
Here's your science on the march. Brought to you by Squires Electric. 503-252-1609 is their phone number. You can also reach them online if you like. That is via the much vaunted cyber highway thing.
Inner tubes?
I was trying to merge cyberspace and information superhighway. What do they call it in Hackers with Angelina Jolie? Do they call it... I should find a speech from Hackers to start the Rick Emerson show today. Did you know they're making a Hackers 3, by the way?
No.
Just FYI, in case you were wondering about that.
You know what I watched last night? The pilot for MTV's Teen Wolf.
Is it terrible?
No, it's actually not that bad.
Was this actually on television or was this somebody?
No, it was on TV. It's on MTV.
And it wasn't terrible?
It really was surprisingly not terrible, although I may be gauging it, putting it up against The Nine Lives of Chloe King, which is an ABC Family show that I watched last week, which was so abominable, I couldn't even finish it. So, you know, so your team programming, you know.
So you were sort of, you know, you were swinging several bats in the on-deck circle.
It was really actually kind of entertaining in sort of a American Werewolf in London kind of a way.
Okay, then. What was that just talking about?
I don't know. The international super tubes of the Intertron.
That. You can find Squires Electric there at that place by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. That is facebook.com/squireselectric. While you're there, please hit the like button if you would. And you can find out more about what they do. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They will come to your home or business. As they do with wires or wiring in either of those places, they can make your life easier. They can wire it from the get-go if you're building something, if you're going to be tearing out everything that's inside a building, because you're going to be remodeling it, turning it into something else. You're going to be expanding your business into more than one location, or stuff just isn't working right for some reason, and you want to make sure that it does. Not that it's likely you will ever need your air conditioner this summer, but if you want to make sure that things are functioning properly as we head through summer into fall into winter, so you're not having to have the guy out there rewiring everything when it's 40 degrees below zero or something. You know, you want to make sure that that your Griswold-esque Christmas light display works. You just get all that stuff taken care of right now, ahead of time, so you don't have to worry about it. SquiresElectric.com is the website. They are the sponsors of this new Science on the March.
Hockey players exposed to body checking for the first time at age 13 don't incur any more injuries from later checking than kids exposed to the hits at an earlier age, according to researchers at the University of Calgary in Canada. But novices to body checking seem to incur more severe injuries. Alberta allows checking at age 11, but Quebec bans it until the age of 13. Of 13 and 14-year-old players, about one-fourth were injured during the 2008-2009 season in each province, with roughly equal rates of concussions. But the Atlanta players were one-third less likely to sustain an injury that kept them off the ice for a week. This, according to scientists in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. A man blind in one eye after being hit by a rock in his youth has regained enough sight in that eye to count fingers displayed 5 meters away. This was reported in the Journal of Medical Case Reports. The 63-year-old man showed up at a clinic with glaucoma, marked by pain, pressure, and bleeding inside the eye. After medication to stabilize eye pressure and slow blood vessel growth in the eye, doctors removed some fluid from it. Surgery to reattach his retina was successful, and it restored some of his vision. Doctors at the Eye and Ear Infirmary, who teamed with other New York City eye experts in treating the man, say this may be the first case of vision recovery in someone with long-term retinal detachment from trauma. People taking high doses of anti-cholesterol drugs called statins appear to have a slightly increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Researchers amassed data from 5 trials of statins that included more than 32,000 people who didn't have diabetes at the trial outset. Compared with people getting a moderate dose statin prescription, those receiving a high dose were on average 12% more likely to develop diabetes than the average during the average 5 years of follow-up in the trials. But high-dose statin recipients were 16% less apt to have heart problems. The statins used were Lipitor and Zocor.
I don't know what a statin is.
It's a kind of anti-cholesterol drug.
Okay.
It's actually kind of controversial. My doctor thought my cholesterol was getting a little high and gave it to me, and it made me really, really sick. And I went online and started researching it and found that basically, yes, it lowers your cholesterol and helps you with your cholesterol issues, but it can damage your muscles. Which is kind of ironic because your heart is a muscle. So they can actually cause damage to your heart, even though the whole point of taking anti-cholesterol medicine is because of you don't want to have a heart attack.
That's really confusing.
It is very confusing. It's there's a lot of discussion that could be had about the necessity of cholesterol medication, whether it actually is or not, and how they've skewed down the danger level for cholesterol over the last few years.
I don't really know what cholesterol is. I just imagine the inside of my veins looking like the grease trap I used to have to clean at a kitchen when I was a teenager.
It.
So I figure there's really nothing I can do about that.
Yeah, it's kind of, taking these pills is kind of like a Roto-Rooter for the thing. I don't want that done.
I've seen the Roto-Rooter man. I know what he does.
Scientists have harnessed a light-gathering protein usually found in the eye to turn on the production of a protein that controls blood sugar. Researchers in Switzerland, France, rigged kidney cells to make the blood sugar control protein when exposed to blue light, and then implanted diabetic mice with tiny capsules containing the engineered cells.
Where do you even get diabetic mice?
Well, I think first you make the mice diabetic.
Okay.
Or you breed diabetic mice.
Do you open a tiny, tiny grandma's buffet right at the...
You just
you put a tiny Carvel store right there.
You fill their little sippy bottle with Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Shining a blue light directly on the mouse's skin or through an implanted optical fiber brought blood sugar levels back to normal.
I don't want to have a light that is sort of shown through my skin. That must be an odd sensation.
Other researchers have switched nerve cells on and off with light-activated proteins, but this is the first time such a system has tackled a metabolic disease in a mammal. According to Edward Boyden, an MIT neuroengineer who was not involved with the study, he said, they offered a compelling clinical demonstration that you can change the physiological state of an organism. It leads to some powerful thinking about what this could lead to. The new technique could be used to spur manufacture of proteins lacking in patients with rare genetic diseases, including phenylketonuria, which is an inability to make an enzyme that can lead to brain damage. Modified versions of the system might also help scientists figure out which biochemical processes are going haywire in a wide variety of diseases.
See, here's why stories like this unnerve me, because when they say something like, might help scientists understand which biochemical process is, that means that they're basically just looking and tinkering with one at a time. What happens if we just remove that one? And they just pull it out, and then they, you know, and then they, and that's, you know, when suddenly you get a mouse that's covered in scales and is 7 feet tall. Or something like that.
Yeah, and then you turn them into robots.
Exactly.
Yeah. Damage to the esophagus might pose less risk of becoming cancerous than had been previously assumed. This, according to a study reported online June 16th in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. Researchers at Queen's University Belfast in Northern Ireland tracked the process of more than 8,500 patients who had Barrett's esophagus, in which acid splashing up from the stomach damages the tube. While earlier work suggested an annual esophageal cancer rate of up to 3% among those patients, the 7-year study in Northern Ireland found that only 0.22% came up cancerous.
I had a friend of mine who actually was a Mormon missionary, and he had that problem. He didn't have the cancer, but he did have the... He was a missionary in Chile. He went and lived in Chile for 2 years. And, of course, when you go from Provo to Chile, that is the culinary changes that one experiences during that 2 years are extreme. And so... But it was like his body just was so actively trying to reject everything he had to eat that it would just, he had this acid reflux that was just insane. And the inside of his esophagus was just, by the time he got back, the inside of his esophagus was just, I mean, it was just raw. He basically had to, take just massive amounts prescription strength, like Tagamet and all that stuff. And then eventually he had to go into the hospital and actually have the inside of his esophagus, like, relined, basically. Because his body spent 2 years going, no, I don't want more horse hoof soup. God damn it. And trying to shove it all back out. And so as a result, he just had these waves of acid that would hit his esophagus. And I think they say that is actually a growing problem with people who are eating something that their body is just not accustomed to. And the whole time, your body's trying to throw it back out as soon as you, as fast as you're putting it in. By the way, is that the end of science there?
Yeah.
I put a little bit of breaking news in the Dropbox.
Oh.
If you want to go to you'll see the headline, and we'll do that as breaking news here in just 1 second. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. That is Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also reach them at facebook.com/squireselectric. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour, featuring a monkey watch, also geek watch, and a penis watch, as well as Mr. Big Jim Willick will be in the studio. Another installment of Humor Meet Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and legacy of Ms. Madeline Kahn. Do you have the...
I do.
All right. So a bit of breaking news for you here at Legion of News.
Actor Peter Falk, known to millions as the rumpled star of television crime drama Columbo, has died. The actor was 83. He was reportedly suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Falk first played Columbo. His first name was never clearly announced, although one badge image listed as Frank. In a 1968 TV movie, its popularity led to a second film and then to the series, which ran from 1971 to 1978. Even after the show was canceled, Falk would play the laid-back detective in Columbo TV movies. He once said of his famous character, he looks like a flood victim. You feel sorry for him. He appears to be seeing nothing, but he's seeing everything. Underneath his dishevelment, a good mind is at work. He was born in 1927 in New York City, grew up in Ossining, New York, where his parents ran a clothing store. At the age of 3, he had an eye removed because of cancer. When something like that happens early, he said in a 1963 interview, you learn to live with it. It became the joke of the neighborhood. If the umpire ruled me out on a bad call, I'd take the fake eye out and hand it to him.
I didn't know he had a fake eye. I never knew that. Really? And so one of the entire time he was on, you know, everything, every photo or every movie I've ever seen with Peter Falk, he had a glass eye or something.
Yes.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, that's why one of his eyes looks just ever so slightly wonky. He actually had a glass eye.
Weird. All right.
I remember reading an interview with him once too that he said a teacher once when he was in elementary school, a teacher told him to keep control of the classroom while she was gone, and he walked up to the classroom and took his eye out, put it on the desk, and told everyone, "I have my eye on you."
Wonderful. Excellent. So, good for him.
After serving as a cook in the Merchant Marine and receiving a master's degree in public administration at Syracuse University, he became an efficiency expert for the Budget Bureau for the state of Connecticut, and then acted in amateur theater and was encouraged to become a professional. His appearance in The Iceman Cometh off-Broadway led to other classical parts. In 1971, he scored a hit in Neil Simon's Prisoner of Second Avenue. And made a lot of movies, including It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, Robin and the Seven Hoods, The Great Race, The Cheap Detective, The In-Laws.
The Brinks Job.
The Brinks Job. He was in The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
And he also did some John Cassavetes films, like Husbands and A Woman Under the Influence. Peter Falk was awesome.
He was
Peter
awesome.
Peter Falk was just awesome. My mother was a huge, huge fan of Columbo. And she had this thing for Peter Falk, and I never, ever, ever understood it. And then a few years ago, I actually, I don't know if it was like Hulu or something, somewhere I came across an episode of Columbo and started watching it just on a whim. And, God, I don't know, he was born in 27, and he did Columbo in like the mid-70s.
Yeah.
So that put him at what, like
55?
But I was looking, I was watching Columbo and going, you know, Peter Falk was a good-looking man.
He was sexy. You know, he had kind of a rumpled charm. I mean, I can see that. He told him, you know what he was?
I'm old enough now to like see it, where I just go, oh yeah, Peter Falk was kind of hot.
He did. No, he had. I can totally see that. That he did have. He was. See, I would say that he had that. He had the same kind of sex appeal that like a William Holden kind of a thing almost. But I mean, but a little more, you know, a little more rumpled. And a little more, you know, kind of a... The idea of describing him as a flood victim, whoever just said that was great. Because it did always look like he looked like a wrinkled bill
that you found in your
pants.
That was Falk himself talking
really?
About Columbo. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like finding a $5 bill in your jeans when you took them out of the wash. And you went, oh, well, okay. You know, like it just sort of got wadded up and then, somebody tried to smooth it out again, but it didn't quite work. And he always, here's the other thing about him, is he always had that kind of weird gleam in his eye. He did always look like he was privy to some kind of knowledge that you yourself did not quite have.
My favorite role of his is Wim Wenders' Wings of Desire, and he plays an angel.
Yeah.
And he is so very. It's a very, very good film, and he is so very good in it.
I forgot about that. I have to watch that again. I don't remember that. I mean, I think I saw that in '96, maybe, and I don't think I've seen it since then. I completely forgot about that. Apparently there's so I guess he had Alzheimer's, and there was a piece that I guess was run about it a couple years ago. So this was a thing that was I guess known, and I don't think I ever heard about it. I don't think I read anything about it. I think I was somehow missed the fact that he had been diagnosed with that, which I guess explains then why it explains why you hadn't sort of heard anything from him. Yeah, so in any event. Well, there you go. So there you go. That is Peter Falk, dead at the age of, how old was he?
83.
83. All right.
New York lawmakers have yet to vote on a bill legalizing same-sex marriage in the state. State Senator Liz Krueger is urging that the bill be brought to the floor.
Let's see. Hold on. Marriage one.
We know that there are at least 31 members of the Senate who have committed publicly to wanting to vote for marriage equality. Bring it to the floor.
That's it?
What?
Okay.
Okay.
She wants that to happen. All right.
Somebody said Peter Falk looked like he should be in a line for bread. He always looks strangely Russian to me. Like I don't know what is like where his family is is from or like what his sort of derivation is. But he always had like an oddly Soviet look to me somehow.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Southwest Airlines was once well known for hiring only female flight attendants and dressing them in hot pants. At least one of its pilots apparently dislikes that isn't the way anymore.
Oh my God! Have you heard the audio?
No, I haven't heard it. I've just read the thing.
Oh, it's I had it. I see you beat me to the puncher. I had it prepared for next hour. Okay, but I have the audio for next next hour for the Rick Emerson Show. I did. It took substantial cleaning, by the way.
Yes.
But it is the best part of it. In case anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, it's where a guy didn't realize his mic was on. Here's the thing: your mic is always on, even if it's not on. Your mic is always on, and so the guy is just on the sort of approaching the tower for, landing. Or
but then he was talking to his co-pilot after takeoff.
But all the chicks are homely and fat and lesbians on the plane because they won't put out for him.
Because they were going to have a layover in Chicago, a city he called Partyland, and saying that 11 effing over-the-top effing A effing homosexuals and a granny.
Yeah, no.
11. I mean, think of the odds of that.
It's a whole lot of chicks that he thinks must be gay because they don't want to spread their legs for him. Because he's obviously such a fine hunk of manhood.
Yeah, he labeled his Chicago-based flight crew as a continuous stream of gays and grannies and grands.
And, no. It's not grand. It's gays, grannies, and grandes is what he calls them.
Grandes. Yeah. Grandes.
Which is the only time in the entire diatribe where he even remotely approaches wit. The best part, though, the very, very best part, and I have the audio from this that we'll play next hour. The very best part is at the end when a guy from, the control tower comes on and says, somebody's microphone is on, and we don't really need to hear about your romantic preferences, so if you could just turn your mic off. And then you hear what is very obviously the guy who has been doing the rant, this idiot monologue. You actually hear him come on and try to feign a sort of calm delivery, and he's like asks for coordinates or whatever, and then says, by the way, that wasn't me. And it was obviously him. I mean, you hear the guy talk for 2.5 minutes, and then it's that wasn't me, by the way. I don't know who that was. That was not me. I mean, there's only two people in the cockpit. I mean, who else do you suppose it was?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, he was suspended without pay, and he's been forced to take sensitivity training.
He has subsequently been reinstated, though.
Yes, by the way. Yes, he has.
So what airline was that?
That was Southwest Airlines.
She got Southwest Airlines. So we have Southwest Airlines who hires this guy and then reinstates him even after this happens. You got Spirit Airlines, which is going to start charging you $5 to print out your boarding pass. And then Delta Airlines, which it came out yesterday, has a branch that they're going to be opening in Saudi Arabia that won't fly Jews anywhere. So really, there are no friendly skies left. That is a bygone era.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday here at Legion of News.
Actress Sarah Ramirez, who plays Dr. Callie Torres on Grey's Anatomy, and who, by the way, is smoking hot.
Is that show still on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is engaged to longtime boyfriend Ryan DeBolt. The couple got engaged June 17th in Paris, and they have yet to announce a wedding date. I've talked about her before. She's awesome because she's one of the few actresses you see on a show like this who isn't super, super skinny. And she also plays a lesbian. And she also is a Broadway actress and was in Spamalot. So she's this amazing singer. And she's just awesome. And I love her. Actress Lindsay Lohan attended a Los Angeles probation hearing yesterday. And Superior Court Judge Stephanie Sutner ruled the celeb did not violate her probation for recently testing positive for alcohol. The testing period ended for Lohan in February. If you are guilty of some violation of your probation, I don't see it, said Sautner. What you're guilty of is extremely poor judgment. The judge also advised Lohan, who is under house arrest on probation violation, to keep her parties to a minimum, adding, don't give people a reason to hate you. Don't do stupid things that fly in the face of the court's order.
See, now why don't we get more judges that just say that, sort of bluntly? Just say, look, we don't want to stick you in the clink, but we really will. Just
don't be a dumbass.
It's the sort of keep it down in there verdict.
29-year-old Glee actor Corey Monteith told Parade magazine that he first went to rehab when he was 19, but unfortunately he went back to doing exactly what I left off doing. Monteith, who claimed he burned a lot of bridges during his youth. Okay, well, he's 29, I guess you could say that. Rebuilt. He's 29? He's playing a high school kid?
Well, that was that whole thing when it came out about those chicks posing in the locker room or whatever, that they were all 27.
He rebuilt his life after his family ordered him to get sober or be turned over to authorities. Monty stole money from a family member to support his drug habit. He said, I don't want kids to think it's okay to drop out of high school and get high, and they'll be famous actors, too. And yet it worked for him.
Yeah.
But for those people who might give up, get real about what you want and go after it. If I can, anyone can.
Okay.
Joel Courtney, the lead in the hit summer film Super 8, has been cast as Tom Sawyer in Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, reports Variety. The movie will shoot in Bulgaria.
He is no Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I'll tell you that right now.
The Office star John Krasinski and Social Network writer Aaron Sorkin are developing an HBO miniseries about the famed Hollywood hotel, the Chateau Marmont.
Yep.
Based on the book Life at the Marmont, the project centers on the inhabitants of the hotel across several generations. The site was a setting for the Stephen Dorff, Elle Fanning snooze fest somewhere. Stars who have stayed or partied at the Chateau Marmont include John Wayne, Vivien Leigh, Judy Garland, Keanu Reeves, Barbara Streisand, and Lindsay Lohan. Oh, yeah, and John Belushi died there.
Now, was it... Now, Laura was actually asking me this the other day, and I didn't know. We were talking about the Chelsea Hotel in New York because there's a whole section of that Patti Smith memoir that takes place when she and Mapplethorpe shared a room at the Chelsea before the Chelsea became sort of... Before it became sort of world famous, when it was just legitimately like a downscale hotel for transients and junkies, and I was sort of talking about the transformation of the Chelsea from this dirtbag hotel that by dint of its association with poor artists who became famous, then became an upscale hotel. And she asked if that was true for the Chateau Marmont or if it had always been an upscale hotel, and I didn't know.
I think it had always been an upscale hotel.
That's kind of what I thought.
It's in. It's sort of just above the strip, and it's a very nice hotel. I think it was built in like the 20s or something. I think it's always been an upscale hotel.
All right.
Former House actress Lisa Edelstein has signed on to The Good Wife for next season in a recurring role, as she'll play an attorney with poker skills who may have a connection with Will, who is played by Josh Charles.
I'm sorry, I was distracted by a thing. Cheryl Kanako was just sending me a technical note right here. But would you repeat that story just for my benefit?
Lisa Edelstein is going to be on The Good Wife next season in a recurring role, playing an attorney with poker skills who may have a connection to Josh Charles' character.
Okay, first of all, that's awesome, because that is the reuniting of two Sports Night characters, because she played Bobby Bernstein and Josh Charles, of course, was Dan Rydell. And there was this story that she was leaving House because they wouldn't meet her contract request, and she actually told them, she's like, I got other offers, and I don't think they believed her. And so this apparently is the other offer she was talking about. Maybe I missed who created the show, or does it say?
The Good Wife? I'm not sure.
Wait, so this is the good, it's not a new show?
This is the Juliana Margulies
Okay, so she's going to do an arc on The Good Wife. It's not like a new show.
No.
Okay, so she and Charles are not leaving to do another show. She is going to be joining that show.
Right.
Okay, all right.
During the KERS 2 press conference, House actor Peter Jacobson was asked about Lisa Edelstein's exit from House, and here he talks about her decision to leave the show.
It's a big loss. It's different. I mean, the show will obviously survive and move on in a bit of a different direction. It's a big loss for us personally, just because, you know, that for me mostly, it's because Lisa's a friend and a lovely actor and person to be around, and that'll be the biggest adjustment for us. The show, any TV show can, you know, I'm not saying that flippantly as if we don't need Lisa and it changes the show drastically, but the show will go on. For us, it's tricky to lose such an essential part of the cast, though.
That must be one of those things where they just get so tired of answering that question, especially when they're there to pimp something else altogether.
Yeah.
All people want to ask them about is the Lisa Edelstein thing.
In an interview with The Guardian, Prince expressed his distaste for downloaded music. I personally can't stand digital music, said Prince. You're getting sound in bits. It affects a different place in your brain. When you play it back, you can't feel anything. We're analog people, not digital. The internet's like MTV. At one time, MTV was hip, and suddenly it became outdated. Anyway, all these computers and digital gadgets are no good. They just fill your head with numbers, and that can't be good for you.
When he says, here's the thing about Prince, is that Prince just says things that are just insane or wrong or make no sense or gibberish. But he has that rare ability that he still remains unbelievably, like, just ineffably cool. But when he says, we're analog people, is he talking about his... Like the secret race of Egyptians to which he belongs, or
his, I have no idea.
His people, the Venusians, or just his people, the soul havers.
Just we in general, we people.
Okay.
The people of Minnesota, maybe.
That's it. People of Minnesota are analog.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all the entertainment.
Here's the thing about that, though,
it's
that's kind of
filling your
great.
Head with numbers, Rick. It can't be good for you.
I like the idea that he's opposed now to giving his music to us in bits when, like, I think everything I've ever purchased by Prince has been on CD. The good thing about this, though, is I'm glad to see, because he's been on this the internet is a fad and I'm past it thing for like 5 years now, and I'm glad to see that he's sticking with it. Like, he obviously, that's not a thing he's just saying to be contrary. Like, it was like in 2002 or something, I first saw an interview with him, where he's like, the internet, that's over. And I thought, well, that's kind of strange. But now, like, years later, he's still just maintaining that the internet, there's no point. Why would you pot? Nah, we're past it. So, I wonder if it's that Prince, like, if he has access to some sort of mystical, like, Stargate device with which he can, you know, just transmit his music to us. And he knows something we don't know, and that's why he's so past the internet. He's like Obama. They took him into a secret room, and they said, look at this device we have. And Prince already knows about a device that will allow him to just transmit his music to our dreams.
By the way, does that mean he's still, like, recording his stuff on reel-to-reel tape? I mean, how is he...
Who knows?
How is he mixing and saving his music?
I have no... Have you seen... did you ever see Kevin Smith tell the story about going to Paisley Park?
No.
Yeah, I know you're not much of a Kevin Smith fan, but on an evening with Kevin Smith, which is just, you know, a DVD of his college tour, he tells the most amazing story about going to Paisley Park, because Prince contacted him about doing, you know, shooting some sort of, I think Prince was, you know, it was one of his, like, he woke up in the middle of the night and had an idea and said, get me Kevin Smith, because he wanted Smith to maybe do some sort of, like, edgy kind of documentary about him or whatever. And so Smith went on this whole tour of Paisley Park, and he tells the most fascinating story about walking through and it being like Wonka's laboratory. And at one point, the guy who was taking him on the tour, and I don't think he met Prince, but for a little bit at the end, but the guy, his handler, who was like taking him through, they walked through Paisley Park, and at one point they walked past a soundstage, and the doors were sort of closed, but there were windows, and you could see, and Smith talked about going by and like looking in the windows at this soundstage, and there was this massive video production taking place where there were like dancers and explosions and, you know, special effects and car crashes and aliens and, you know, and a band playing, and there was this huge video shoot going on, and Smith is like, what's going on in there, man? What are those cats doing? Are they filming a video? And the guy's like, oh yeah, that's you know, the video we're filming for whatever song. And Smith goes, well, cool, is that for a new album or something? And the guy's like, nah, nobody will ever see that. And he goes, well, what do you mean? He goes, oh, we do that stuff all the time. It's like we're always filming some huge production. Just goes in a vault. Nobody ever sees any of it. And he said that happens all the time at Paisley Park, that there are constantly just these huge, huge productions being written and recorded and then sealed in a vault, and nobody ever sees any of them. And Frank Zappa did the same thing for most of his life. So it is possible that Prince is just, you know, some mystical... you know, he has access to some mystical Vulgate and means of transmission that we mortals... cannot yet know, that our feeble earth brains aren't ready for. He has technology possible that we could not accept right now.
He does not seem like he is of our world.
He really doesn't.
No. That's all the entertainment.
Are we done there? Yeah. All right, let's see. There's your entertainment news for Friday right here at Legion of News. We got like 1 minute, 5 seconds. If you'd like to...
Okay, well, here. Can you guess, Rick Emerson, what is the most popular cereal brand in American grocery stores?
I'm sorry, before we do that, not that it really affects us for but more than like another 60 seconds. Apparently, there was an issue with the Cascadia.fm stream, I guess it's pointless to even talk about this now if you're listening to me on Cascadia, but apparently that was going sketchy. Apparently, it's back up now. So, okay. There were some issues, but I guess they have resolved those. The most popular breakfast cereal where?
In America. In American grocery
Cheerios.
Stores. Cheerios. You're right.
Yeah.
Yay. It's been General Mills' top seller since 1951. Is now 70 years old. Cheerios. They're made, little balls of dough are heated and shot out of a puffing gun at hundreds of miles an hour. And they've been making them in Buffalo, New York since 1941. They tried more than 10 different shapes and sizes before they settled on O's. So there you go. Cheerios are 70 years old.
Are you still angling for a job on KFAM? Heyo!
I kind of thought that might be more interesting than it turned out to be.
In retrospect, not so much.
Yeah, it didn't really work out for me.
And with that, we bring down the curtain on another episode of... We'll make that the week's final news story. Another episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com today.
Cheerios killed a man.
Monkey Watch coming up. Also, Penis Watch. Also, wait. Monkey, penis. There's a third thing. Monkey watch, penis watch.
Geek, maybe?
Maybe. Well, whatever. Also, Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, Kaiba, the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We thank you for joining us. And because it's been stuck in my head for like 3 days now, during the interstitial segment here, we'll be playing that Stop Forwarding That Crap to Me song by Weird Al.
Oh, God! That's been in my head. It was all night last night and all morning.
I'm not gonna
song has been stuck in my head.
I'm not going to suffer alone. So that's happening before the Rick Emerson Show starts next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Have a safe and satisfying Friday. We'll see you next week. Bye now.